Right now it is time for the Media Beat with David Terachuk. David joins us, of course, every Friday morning. We rebroadcast David over the weekend as well. David has his own website, which is themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And something tells me we'll be going across the ocean to talk about some election results that happened recently. David, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you again. I'm reporting back in, reporting to you because I'm back in the media capital of the world, New York City, and glad to be joining once again the resilient Marshall Miles. How are you doing, Marshall? Are you taking good care of yourself?
I am. I took two extra days off after the stem cell transplant, and like always happens with me after anesthesia, when the anesthesia finally wears off, my sleeping cycle is all screwed up. So I've been up now for 24 hours, but
oh my, as if your sleeping cycle wasn't already disturbed hugely by the work that you do anyway.
It'll all be back to normal because we're going into the weekend, so I've got the weekend to straighten that out. But other than that, everything's fine. And I didn't follow news closely for a couple of days, but then I see all the news about Boris Johnson.
Well, yes, back in my old home country, things are difficult. Well, it's the world as a whole, including this country, presents a very edgy and mixed picture at the moment. And threatened as we are by the new Omicron variant of COVID, which America's Center for Disease Control is warning, after all, that it could bring a punishing wave of new disease by next month. And with half of these United States of ours now reporting Omicron cases, it's clear from all the news sources that work the hardest on this matter that, to quote my local hometown newspaper, the New York Times, quite clearly, blunt headline words here, Omicron's spread is certain, it says. And we can just as confidently predict that very different, conflicting reactions will come to the public health measures that will in all likelihood be called upon to counter the virus's extra spread. And actually, just let me add a personal reporting note. From here in my neighborhood in Manhattan, there have been extraordinary lines around the block for COVID testing stations. It really almost immediately looks like a throwback to the really bad times of last year. But worldwide, as you mentioned, we here in the States kind of know already quite enough about the anti-vaxxers and the anti-maskers, but it's disturbing to see overseas a really remarkable anti-public health fanaticism, I suppose is the right way to pronounce that, fanaticism that surges all over Europe, including Germany. It's formed a very unwelcoming reception for the brand new Chancellor in Germany, Olaf Scholz. And as you mentioned, there's been political trouble for Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the UK. There's been a conservative rebellion right at the heart of the British political system in the Parliament, 100 of his own party refusing to support him as he attempts to tighten the countrywide restrictions in the face of Omicron. But the biggest thing overnight, of course, is, as you were alluding to, the people speaking in the overall general public, at least in one part of the country, speaking very clearly. In the parliamentary seat held by one of Boris Johnson's own cronies, I think it's fair to call him that, there was certainly a lot of cronyism going on between that particular member of parliament at the time and Boris Johnson. But eventually Boris Johnson dropped him like a hot brick in the atmosphere of accusations of sleaze and accepting the members of parliament like this particular individual accepting money for raising issues in parliament on behalf of the corporate interests that he was taking the money from. And of course, that scandal resulted in the particular member of parliament resigning, not very willingly, and he went rather ungraciously in terms of his statements. But he went, and then he had to be replaced, and he replaced by what in Britain is called a by-election, just a purely local election in the district that he represented. And the party that previously held it, Boris Johnson's own party, the Conservative Party, very dramatically lost the seat. It's a part of England that has, I don't think, ever not been a Conservative parliamentary seat, something like 100 years, I think, gone overnight. And the Liberal Democrat has taken the previously offending Member of Parliament, taken his place. And so concerning Johnson's troubles, I should acknowledge that outlets like even The Economist magazine, which I think you'll know, I feel has a rather bloated, overrated reputation for its kind of knowingness, actually put its finger on something this week, even before the actual election result, which it sensed was coming, in describing Johnson's government as now being broken, a broken government. The Economist says that such collapses of authority are common amongst UK prime ministers, especially at the point of 2 years into their term of office, which is where Johnson is now. So I guess that's something we know about here in the United States with our presidents. Yes, 2 years in.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's the way it is. And what I take from this story is it's one big story because it's been a conservative a stronghold for so long. But once again, that's not indicative of what might happen in another year or two. I mean, because if it gets much worse, obviously Bojo will be on the way out.
Well, yes. I mean, that's certainly what a lot of conservatives are starting to think now, especially ambitious members of parliament who see now that something that would not have applied in the previous 2 years, that he's a wounded and weakened prime minister, and of course that's the time that you begin to form your attack in order to replace him. And there are lots of ambitious front bench, as they call them, members of parliament on Boris Johnson's side, who can't wait to start organizing against him. They wouldn't dare do it until now, but I think rather like the shark sensing blood in the water when there's an injured prey around, that will start to happen. And he has another 3 years, in fact, parliamentary terms through which an administration measures its length of time formally in office in Britain is a 5-year term. So he has another 3 years, but clearly this looks like the first blow that will lead to many more actively inflicted blows in time to come.
Let's still switch away from that and come back to this country, where a big lawsuit is going to move on now, as a key decision has allowed the Dominion lawsuit against Fox News to continue, which means that Dominion can now request lots of information from Fox, lots of emails and letters and intercourse correspondence about what they did to develop their strategy to reporting the results of the election in the United States.
Yes, it's all part of a very much bigger story. Of course, essentially this is one of the particulars of the media coverage of what I guess is probably accurate, if a little clumsy, way of describing the myth being peddled by Trump supporters, meaning indeed most of the powerful and incumbent people in the Republican Party at the moment. That's the big lie. The big lie being, of course, that Trump actually won the election, had it stolen from him. And critical to that is Fox News's adoption of that story. And Fox News has incurred an awful lot of trouble by doing it, but they're sticking to it because it seems to make best sense. It certainly helps their ratings. They are now leading the battle against their main competitor, competitors, CNN and MSNBC, as a direct result, it's very clear to see, of peddling this this falsehood. And, of course, amongst the falsehood is the suggestions of, you know, against the company that actually makes the election, the voting machines were involved in the 2020 November 2020 election. And indeed, you know, will be used again next time. There's no actual evidence to suggest there's anything manipulable in the way that the accusations that Fox News peddled suggested. And now, yes, here's a legal judgment that puts Fox on the back foot now, and Dominion, the company involved, has a chance for re-establishing, I should say, I suppose, their good reputation, which has not really been diminished in the minds of sensible people, I don't think. I mean, there is no evidence for the kind of fraudulent activity that Fox is suggesting actually being true, but we'll see that work itself out through the legal system, and it's certainly another sign of Fox, you know, the downside, such as it is, for Fox taking the tack that it has been taken. One of the big things, of course, is that it lost its preeminent journalist of a good reputation, the redoubtable Chris Wallace, who decided over last weekend to leave the company. His Sunday show was his occasion for saying goodbye, and although he gave a generous statement at the end saying that he himself has never been interfered with as a journalist working at Fox News, nobody cross-questioned any of his questions that he asked politicians. Nobody questioned what guests he had on his show, he said, and he'd had a very good time with Fox. But between the lines, we know, and it's been clear from what he's done in internal communications with Fox bosses, that he was very unhappy with this extraordinary realignment of Fox behind a tissue of lies, to put it bluntly. The way that the Fox bosses have backed all the way a very different kind of journalist, so-called journalist at Fox News, Tucker Carlson, who has embraced the big lie most enthusiastically compared with even any of his other Trump-supporting colleagues at Fox News. And that sat very badly with Chris Wallace, son, of course, of a great colleague of mine who's now long dead, I'm afraid, Mike Wallace, and he's showing some of the irascibility now. Young Chris is about my age, I think, he's striking out. He's leaving, and we'll see him in one of those interesting new phenomena, a streaming version of CNN's output. That will be interesting to see. What's promised by that new service is not yet clear, but if it has Chris Wallace, it is presumably going to have a tough, single-minded, and clear news-based agenda instead of what was the agenda for most of Fox through the latter years of Chris Wallace's time with them.
And eventually CNN, having him under the digital wing, will obviously, when it's appropriate and legal, have him make appearances on the network as well. I think that's just the next step that will come.
Oh, I have very little doubt about that. Yeah, I mean, you don't have a well-known brand, if you like, as like Chris Wallace clearly is, and you don't keep him on the sidelines, even though it might be important for building up the new streaming session. We'll certainly see Chris Wallace back on the mainstream when and as needed. I expect the CNN plan will be.
I want to go back to COVID-19 for a second, and France is shutting down, basically, the reports that are coming from the rail and also on planes. Eurostar is fully booked. They are sold out. through the time when the time comes where that no people will be allowed in unless they've got a really, 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 really good and tight reason. And also, now they say about 80% of the flights are booked, 2-hour waits at Dover. So France is not taking any chances this time.
Absolutely. Excuse me. And I'll say that the Brits are very disturbed by this. I've had a lot of calls, one in particular from a colleague who was hoping to spend Christmas in France with his family. He's a Brit, and so are his family, but they happen to live in France. Being able to do that is now very much in question. He described himself as suddenly being at war with the government of France. But it's that's one individual's take on it, and the inconvenience it's caused is, I'm sure, very disturbing for them. But overall, like I was mentioning before, in many countries across Europe at the moment, there's concern stimulated by the Omicron variant of the COVID virus. We just don't know how serious it's going to be. The overall calculations being made have a range. I mean, the consortium that does medical modeling, headquartered in Austin, Texas, is suggesting 16 different likely scenarios, and they range from not a great deal of effect to the kind of definite and cataclysmic predictions that, as I was saying, the New York Times is suggesting that it will indeed be very serious. It will be a kind of punishing wave of disease. But elsewhere in Europe, besides France, Norway is observing huge numbers, rather replicating on a national scene the sort of thing that we've just seen in a microcosm of Cornell University, the campus here in New York State, that essentially closed down because of the very fast contagion that Omicron is representing there, and over in Europe. France is shutting down, as you say, certainly blocking cross-channel passengers from coming in from Britain, where they see the very high numbers recorded there. And in Belgium, Holland, and other Western European countries, we're seeing a reimposition of restrictions, and of course, what I was also alluding to earlier on, the pockets of very active and very bitter and sometimes rather violent resistance to restrictions. It's a very odd panoply of reactions. Some popular, some stirred by deliberate activists. It's a disturbing pattern, and I think there is a serious danger that we'll be reporting through another winter of profound discontent on both sides of the Atlantic and who knows, in other continents too.
Yeah, and of course, Britain is getting set to shut down bars and night spots like that. And even here in the United States, testing is up. The major sports leagues in the United States, two of the major ones, are the National Football League and the NBA, are revamping their COVID-19 rules to tighten down, because right now it's not spinning out of control, but it is spinning in the direction where the infection rate is increasing in most places in the United States drastically.
Yeah, and the one area of uncertainty, which is still to be researched and made clear, is whether or not, as some people have been saying, and some reliable sources have been reporting, that while the infection rate is extraordinarily high, 70 times higher than anything we've seen before, one source was saying, one laboratory reported, another element of the virus's behavior is much less clear, which of course is whether or not the disease that it inflicts is as severe or more severe. The evidence, the preponderance of evidence, seems to be suggesting that it's not as severe, but we don't know that for sure, and we don't know, and this is perhaps the most important element of the puzzling equation, we don't quite know what the cause of that potentially less lethal form or severity of the disease can be attributed to. Is it because it is innately less virulent as a disease carrier, or is it because the host population, all of us humans, are now that much more resistant to it? Is the fact that whatever level of vaccination there does exist in various populations, it's this which is helping to limit the severity of the symptoms that people are suffering when Omicron strikes. This is one of the great unknowns that laboratories everywhere are struggling to try and clarify for us. As I say, there are 16 known scenarios being played out by the modeling people in Austin, Texas, and those at the more serious end of the spectrum are suggesting that it may be less severe in its effect in individuals, but inevitably there will be, with the sheer mass of infections that are likely to result from it, there is bound to be a spike in deaths and in hospitalizations and especially in intensive care units of the hospitals to which people are admitted.
It's funny, I had an interview earlier this morning with the director of the community health systems here in Connecticut, and he pointed out something that viruses are ever-changing and multiplying, and in the long run, the virus will adapt and change as more people get it, because the only way the virus can continue to multiply is if it has bodies to multiply in.
That's right. And that's what we see. I mean, if there's a surge in infection, there may well be a surge of disease which is not as debilitating in individual patients as before. That's arguable. That could be possible. But the sheer fact that the host bodies are that much greater, then inevitably it's going to put enormously greater pressure on the health systems of every area where it's operating, and as I say, already it is half of the United States that's reporting such cases. So I think it's not a matter of optimism or pessimism. I think realism is, and our real life experience of COVID so far suggests that we can expect a great deal more pressure on our health systems as we move into the winter.
You know, and I'll go to our final story is an international story, and that is the ExoMars Trace Gas Orbiter, which was launched back in 2016 between the European Space Agency, has discovered large amounts of water under the ground in this huge canyon, which is, I guess, 10 or 20 times bigger than the Grand Canyon on Mars.
Always something new out of space. Aliquid quid novum is the old Latin expression, and of course space exploration is always exciting because there's always something to add to our body of knowledge. It's the great unknown. Well, there are so many great unknowns in our life at the moment, I'm not sure if we can focus on one so exclusively. But if you want to broaden your horizons, then of course look upward. And sure enough, more information is coming our way, and we're learning more and more. Now, eventually, I suppose this is it could be a suggestion that there's potential for colonization, that extraordinarily old-fashioned word that people avoid these days, but there's always a possibility, I suppose, in the long-distant future, involving very long-distant travel, of course, which takes up an awful lot of time to get there, but it raises that possibility of our setting up alternative places to escape our own planet to. It's feasible, at least. I'm not a great science fiction fan, and I'm not in the game of long-term speculation generally in any division of human life and endeavor. But it's hard not to respond to news like that. With the thought that, maybe those science fiction films contained a kernel of potential truth.
And one final story that I know you have a connection with, and that is out of South Africa. The High Court has ordered the former President Zuma back to jail.
Yep, absolutely. There is a man who's in jail, has been in jail, although he got temporarily released on a kind of parole, a medical parole, or so it was claimed by his counsel, and now he's going back to jail. And it's important to remember, I think, that this ex-president was sent to jail because of contempt of court. He was refusing to participate in an investigation into corruption from the time that he was in office. Now, there, I think, lies some kind of parable, I think, for the world as a whole. Even ex-presidents don't escape punishment when they refuse to come forward with evidence about credible accusations of criminal behavior on their behalf and on behalf, on the part of people working for them. It's an important story, and maybe it's an example for the rest of us.
All right, David, always great to speak with you. We've got the, of course, the big holiday edition next week.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you then.
All right, take care. David Terechuk with the Media Beat here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, you find David at our own website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on the Media Beat with David Terechuk on our on-demand page. David has his own website, themediabeat.us, which is available to all to go and peruse as well.